Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Bob Enyart. We are joining George W. Bush in his State of the Union address in progress. Here is the President of the United States.
Ted Kennedy, Patrick Kennedy, his son.
And Bernice Johnson.
Bernice Johnson, Texas.
I think every president.
Ed Skelton,
Missouri. Chris, can I say that?
All right,
every
now
needs to realize
the applause, of course, in Congress is always significant from both sides of the aisle. From both sides of the aisle, I remember when Clinton was giving his address, the Republicans would applaud significantly. Couldn't understand that, but they did. They did. So the president is addressing both houses of Congress, and the Congress, this is where the House of Representatives and the Senate join together. And, of course, that adds 100 people to the House of Representatives, so they couldn't all fit in the Senate, so they convene in the House of Representatives. And George W. Bush is waiting for the obligatory 2 or 3 minutes of applause to pass. And we could see his wife, Laura Bush.
Mr. Speaker, Vice President Cheney, members of Congress, distinguished citizens and fellow citizens. Every year, by law and by custom, we meet here to consider the State of the Union. This year, we gather in this chamber deeply aware of decisive days that lie ahead. You and I serve our country in a time of great consequence. During this session of Congress, we have the duty to reform domestic programs vital to our country. We have the opportunity to save millions of lives abroad from a terrible disease. We will work for a prosperity that is broadly shared, and we will answer every danger and every enemy that threatens the American people.
Colin Powell, Donald Rumsfeld.
In all these days of promise and days of reckoning, we can be confident. In a whirlwind of change and hope and peril, our faith is sure, our resolve is firm, and our union is strong.
Every president begins the State of the Union address by saying the union is good. The union is strong.
This country has many challenges. We will not deny. We will not ignore. We will not pass along our problems to other Congresses, to other presidents, and other generations. We will continue.
That should refer to deficit spending.
We will confront them with focus and clarity and courage. During the last 2 years, we have seen what can be accomplished when we work together. To lift the standards of our public schools, we achieved historic education reform, which must now be carried out in every school.
Now, the president is talking about his, of course, continued support for public schools. Government schools are a bad idea, not authorized in the Congress, and destructive of families and even of education itself. So it's sad that so many conservatives are radically pro-government schools.
We reorganized our government and created the Department of Homeland Security, which is mobilizing against the threats of a new era. To bring our economy out of recession, we delivered the largest tax relief in a generation.
Tax relief that spread over a number of years, very little has hit, and we might lose it.
In American business, we passed tough reforms, and we are holding corporate criminals to account.
Well, we've reported on some of the weakening of the accounting laws.
Some might call this a good record. I call it a good start. Tonight, I ask the House and the Senate to join me in the next bold steps to serve our fellow citizens. Our first goal is clear. We must have an economy that grows fast enough to employ every man and woman who seeks a job.
Sadly, that's not the job of the government, but who today, what conservative today can acknowledge that?
And stock market declines, our economy is recovering. Yet it's not growing fast enough or strongly enough. With unemployment rising, our nation needs more small businesses to open, more companies to invest and expand, more employers to put up the sign that says, "Help wanted." Jobs are created when the economy grows. The economy grows when Americans have more money to spend and invest. And the best and fairest way to make sure Americans have that money is not to tax it away in the first place.
Of course, that's absolutely true. But equally destructive is the wild deficit spending that we're in and is apparently growing. That's effectively taxing our children and grandchildren. So there's two sides of the equations, lower taxes and lower spending. Bush talks about lower taxes as increased spending significantly.
I'm proposing that all the income tax reductions set for 2004 and 2006 be made permanent and effective this year.
Yeah, the tax cuts that Bush already got into office are
under
mostly
my plan,
for
as soon
the
as
future.
I sign the bill, this extra money will start showing up in workers' paychecks. Instead of gradually reducing the marriage penalty, we should do it now.
And of course, that's true, but there should be a flat tax across the board.
Instead of slowly raising the child credit to $1,000, we should send the checks to American families now.
But of course, there should be no child tax credit. There should be a flat tax of 5% across the board.
This tax relief is for everyone who pays income taxes, and it will help our economy immediately. 92 million Americans will keep this year an average of almost $1,100 more of their own money. A family of four with an income of $40,000 would see their federal income taxes fall from $1,178 to $45 per year.
And tens of millions of Americans pay absolutely no income tax on the low end of the income scale.
The
and, of course, that hurts their own self-respect. Everybody should pay. You should pay a flat rate of 5%.
And promise them for future years. If this tax relief is good for Americans 3 or 5 or 7 years from now, it is even better for Americans today.
And that's the point I made earlier, that most of the Bush tax cut is for future years, which is something that Congress has long done. They put the difficult actions ahead to future years where it could be undone before we get there.
We should also strengthen the economy by treating investors equally in our tax laws. It's fair to tax a company's profits. It is not fair to again tax the shareholder on the same profits.
And I'm all for getting rid of the dividend tax, but it's not fair to tax a company's profits because the company is owned by people who pay income tax.
To help the nearly 10 million seniors who receive dividend income, I ask you to end the unfair double taxation of dividends.
Corporations should not be taxed at all. Human beings earn money, and human beings should pay taxes. That's it.
Expand. More jobs mean more taxpayers and higher revenues to our government. The best way to address the deficit and move toward a balanced budget is to encourage economic growth and to show some spending discipline in Washington, D.C.
Spending discipline is great, but sadly, spending skyrockets under every Republican administration in decades now. Spending typically increases faster under Republican administrations than Democratic presidents. Why is that?
We must work together to fund only our most important priorities. I will send you a budget that increases discretionary spending by 4% next year, about as much as the average family's income is expected to grow. And that is a good benchmark for us. Federal spending should not rise any faster than the paychecks of American families. A growing economy and a focus on essential priorities will be crucial to the future of Social Security. As we continue to work together to keep Social Security sound and reliable, we must offer younger workers a chance to invest in retirement accounts that they will control and they will own. Our second goal is high-quality, affordable health for all Americans.
All right, we're back. Bob and Yurt live and continuing with the president's speech in progress.
The American system of medicine is a model of skill and innovation, with a pace of discovery that is adding good years to our lives. Yet for many people, medical care costs too much, and many have no health coverage at all. These problems will not be solved with a nationalized health care system that dictates coverage and rations care.
That's true, but unfortunately, the next statement will be false. Nationalized health care is a mistake, but George W. Bush doesn't understand the government should get out of health care.
Instead, we must work toward a system in which all Americans have a good insurance policy, choose their own doctors, and seniors and low-income Americans receive the help they need.
That's socialism. It's a little different than what the Democrats want, but it's the Republican welfare program.
And trial lawyers and HMOs, we must put doctors and nurses and patients back in charge of American medicine. Healthcare reform must begin with Medicare. Medicare is a binding commitment of a caring society.
Medicare is destructive. It's not part of the government's role. God gave government the authority to defend rights against criminals and enemy armies and to build infrastructure like roads, not to provide welfare programs for prescription drugs, etc.
To preventive medicine and new drugs that are transforming healthcare in America. Seniors happy with the current Medicare system should be able to keep their coverage just the way it is.
And that's welfare, and welfare is socialism, and it's wrong.
Just like you, the members of Congress and your staffs and other federal employees, all seniors should have the choice of a healthcare plan that provides prescription drugs.
Now, that's just flat-out socialism. Socialism destroys the benefits that you get from freedom. Freedom, you'd have the best medicine at the best price. Socialism discourages people from providing for themselves.
$400 billion over the next decade to reform and strengthen Medicare. Leaders of both political parties have talked for years about strengthening Medicare. I urge the members of this new Congress to act this year.
So if the Democrats want to take us off the cliff at 90 miles an hour, the Republicans want to go at 70 miles an hour.
We must address one of the prime causes of higher cost, the constant threat that physicians and hospitals will be unfairly sued.
And of course, that's true. We need tort reform, but God has the answers on how to do that in the Bible. Let's see if that comes up.
Litigation. Everybody pays more for health care, and many parts of America are losing fine doctors. No one has ever been healed by a frivolous lawsuit. I urge the Congress to pass medical liability reform.
And how do you do that? What is the just outcome of a frivolous lawsuit? I'm sure there are no end of ideas. God has an idea on that, but I don't think anyone will consult him in our government.
Our third goal is to promote energy independence for our country while dramatically improving the environment. I have sent you a comprehensive energy plan to promote energy efficiency and conservation, to develop cleaner technology, and to produce more energy at home.
Ronald Reagan said that the government does not need an energy plan. That was Ronald Reagan's approach. He was a bit more conservative than George W. Bush.
That mandates a 70% cut in air pollution from power plants over the next 15 years. I have sent you a healthy forest initiative to help prevent the catastrophic fires that devastate communities, kill wildlife, and burn away millions of acres of treasured forests.
And all this is fine. It's part of the government's job to deal with infrastructure and public lands.
I urge you to pass these measures for the good of both our environment and our economy. Even more, I ask you to take a crucial step and protect our environment in ways that generations before us could not have imagined. In this century, the greatest environmental progress will come about not through endless lawsuits or command and control regulations, but through technology and innovation. Tonight, I'm proposing $1.2 billion in research funding so that America can lead the world in developing clean, hydrogen-powered automobiles.
You know, if the government did not tax all of us at about a 50% rate, there would be billions upon billions upon billions available for research, and we'd be so far ahead of where we are right now.
A simple chemical reaction between hydrogen and oxygen generates energy, which can be used to power a car, producing only water, not exhaust fumes. With a new national commitment, our scientists and engineers will overcome obstacles to taking these cars from laboratory to showroom, so that the first car driven by a child born today could be powered by hydrogen and pollution-free.
And that's great. That'd be neat. But we'd get there further if we had low taxes. The more billions of dollars of government spending, the higher the taxes go, regardless of the claims.
Join me in this important innovation to make our air significantly cleaner and our country much less dependent on foreign sources of energy.
Now that's the shot across the bow that scares the Arab and the oil-producing world, I'll tell you that. Make us less dependent on foreign oil? Ew, that's
our
good. I like
it. Our goal is to apply the compassion of America to the deepest problems of America. For so many in our country, the homeless and the fatherless, the addicted, the need is great. Yet there is power, wonder-working power, in the goodness and idealism and faith of the American people.
That was a code
Americans
language, power in the blood, the power, wonder, work, and power.
Visiting prisoners, providing shelter for battered women.
The liberals will figure that out. That'll be in the articles tomorrow.
Seniors. These good works deserve our praise. They deserve our personal support. And when appropriate, they deserve the assistance of the federal government.
No, they don't. Churches, religious programs, ministries do not need tax subsidies to do their job.
Pass both my faith-based initiative and the Citizen Service Act to encourage acts of compassion that can transform America one heart and one soul at a time.
Taxes are taken by force. If you don't pay your taxes, they throw you in jail. That's not the source of charity. God in the Bible says, give freely of a willing heart. You don't have the government collect like a strong arm, take money from your neighbor so your church could use it. That's wrong. Welfare is wrong. These programs are destructive, they're counterproductive, and getting churches involved as a middleman makes it worse, not better.
Boys and girls trying to grow up without guidance and attention, and children who have to go through a prison gate to be hugged by their mom or dad. I propose a $450 million initiative to bring mentors to more than a million disadvantaged.
The main reason we have so many broken families is because of the public schools. The government schools, which George Bush promotes and spends billions on and constantly wants to increase spending on, that's the exact source of the destruction of the family, because the government takes over the job of raising kids. And so in order to solve the problem of all the broken families, we're going to spend $500 million on mentors to help the kids in the broken families that were ruined by the public schools. It's like this vicious cycle of destructive thinking.
The cause of hopelessness is addiction to drugs. Addiction crowds out friendship, ambition, moral conviction, and reduces all the richness of life to a single destructive desire. As a government, we are fighting illegal drugs by cutting off supplies and reducing demand through anti-drug education programs. Yet for those already addicted, the fight against drugs is a fight for their own lives. Too many Americans in search of treatment cannot get it. So tonight I propose a new $600 million program to help an additional 300,000 Americans receive treatment over the next 3 years.
And like the previous programs, for the most part, it'll be a complete waste of money, create a new bureaucracy, a lot of government workers, psychobabble, and failure.
With recovery programs that do amazing work. One of them is found at the Healing Place Church in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. A man in the program said, "God does miracles in people's lives, and you never think it could be you." Tonight, let us bring to all Americans who struggle with drug addiction this message of hope. The miracle of recovery is possible, and it could be you.
The sad thing there is now the churches will have their hands out, just like our caller on the show last night, who was upset that his church didn't give him money, and the churches will be upset that they don't get their hands in the pot.
Welcoming society, a culture that values every life. And in this work, we must not overlook the weakest among us. I ask you to protect infants at the very hour of their birth and end the practice of partial birth abortion.
Well, that's great. Of course, we should end that brutal murder of children. I'm glad the president called for that. We should, of course, end all the killing of unborn children.
And because no human life should be started or ended as the object of an experiment, I ask you to set a high standard for humanity and pass a law against all human cloning.
And that's a good argument. No human being should be an experiment.
The qualities of courage and compassion that we strive for in America also determine our conduct abroad. The American flag stands for more than our power and our interests. Our founders.
The president's going to start talking about Iraq soon, and we'll be back after this news break.
This conviction leads us into the world to help the afflicted and defend the peace and confound the designs of evil men. In Afghanistan, we helped to liberate an oppressed people, and we will continue helping them secure their country, rebuild their society, and educate all their children, boys and girls.
For those on the internet, we decided we just continue with the president's speech. Our radio affiliates are going to break right now and again in 15 minutes.
In the Middle East, we will continue to seek peace between a secure Israel and a democratic Palestine.
Conservatives everywhere talk about democracy as though it is the answer.
America is feeding the hungry. More than 60% of international food aid comes as a gift from the people of the United States. As our nation moves troops and builds alliances to make our world safer, we must also remember our calling as a blessed country is to make the world better. Today, on the continent of Africa, nearly 30 million people have the AIDS virus, including 3 million children under the age of 15. There are whole countries in Africa where more than one-third of the adult population carries the infection. More than 4 million require immediate drug treatment. Yet across that continent, only 50,000 AIDS victims, only 50,000, are receiving the medicine they need. Because the AIDS diagnosis is considered a death sentence, many do not seek treatment. Almost all who do are turned away. A doctor in rural South Africa describes his frustration. He says, "We have no medicines." Many hospitals tell people, "You've got AIDS. We can't help you. Go home and die." In an age of miraculous medicines, no person should have to hear those words.
We have destroyed the entire continent of Africa with trillions of dollars of welfare money. We've destroyed their economy. That's why they can't afford to take care of themselves.
AIDS can be prevented. Antiretroviral drugs can extend life for many years. And the cost of those drugs has dropped from $12,000 a year to under $300 a year, which places a tremendous possibility within our grasp.
And we are back. We are back. Bob and Yurt Live joining the president in progress.
So much for so many. We have confronted and will continue to confront HIV/AIDS in our own country. And to meet a severe and urgent crisis abroad tonight, I propose the Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, a work of mercy beyond all current international efforts to help the people of Africa. This comprehensive plan will prevent 7 million new AIDS infections, treat at least 2 million people.
The president's plan will treat the symptoms, not the problem. What he should say is that sexual immorality devastates individuals, families, communities, and nations. Sexual immorality leads to disease, depression, divorce. It's destructive. But of course, he won't say that. Why not? We could spend billions on the symptoms.
I ask the Congress to commit $15 billion over the next 5 years, including nearly $10 billion in new money, to turn the tide against AIDS in the most afflicted nations of Africa and the Caribbean.
And if these sexually immoral people don't get AIDS, they'll still destroy their lives just through other means. We're not addressing the problem, just the symptom.
This nation can lead the world in sparing innocent people from a plague of nature. And this nation is leading the world in confronting and defeating the man-made evil of international terrorism. There are days when our fellow citizens do not hear news about the war on terror. There's never a day when I do not learn of another threat or receive reports of operations in progress or give an order in this global war against a scattered network of killers. The war goes on, and we are winning.
I think that's true. We are winning. They lost the government. They lost the country. They've lost a lot of funding, a lot of opportunity.
To date, we have arrested or otherwise dealt with many key commanders of Al-Qaeda. They include a man who directed logistics and funding for the September the 11th attacks, the chief of Al-Qaeda operations in the Persian Gulf who planned the bombings of our embassies in East Africa, and the USS Cole, an Al-Qaeda operations chief from Southeast Asia, former director of Al-Qaeda's training camps in Afghanistan, key Al-Qaeda operative in Europe, major Al-Qaeda leader in Yemen. All told, more than 3,000 suspected terrorists have been arrested in many countries. Many others have met a different fate. Let's put it this way. They're no longer a problem to the United States and our friends and allies.
And how many have we executed so far? The whole lot of them? I think close to that? I hope so.
We are working closely with other nations to prevent further attacks. American coalition countries have uncovered and stopped terrorist conspiracies targeting the embassy in Yemen, the American embassy in Singapore, Saudi military base, ships in the Straits of Hormuz and the Straits of Gibraltar. We've broken Al-Qaeda cells in Hamburg, Milan, Madrid, London, Paris, as well as Buffalo, New York. We have the terrorists on the run. We're keeping them on the run. One by one, the terrorists are learning the meaning of American justice.
The terrorists convicted for trying to blow up the World Trade Center, killing, injuring 1,000, we couldn't even get the death penalty for them. That's not justice.
Despite this war, we will remember where it began. Here in our own country. This government is taking unprecedented measures to protect our people and defend our homeland. We've intensified security at the borders and ports of entry, posted more than 50,000 newly trained federal screeners in airports, begun inoculating troops and first responders against smallpox, and are deploying the nation's first early warning network of sensors to detect biological attack. And this year, for the first time, we are beginning to field a defense to protect this nation against ballistic missiles.
That's really cool. Doing that up in Alaska.
I thank the Congress for supporting these measures. I ask you tonight to add to our future security with a major research and production effort to guard our people against bioterrorism called Project BioShield. The budget I send you will propose almost $6 billion to quickly make available effective vaccines and treatments against agents like anthrax, botulinum toxin, Ebola, and plague. We must assume that our enemies would use these diseases as weapons, and we must act before the dangers are upon us.
Now, as part of the defense of foreign enemies, and domestic for that matter, that's appropriate government funding as a part of the defense budget.
Our intelligence and law enforcement agencies have worked more closely than ever to track and disrupt the terrorists. The FBI is improving its ability to analyze intelligence and is transforming itself to meet new threats. Tonight, I am instructing the leaders of the FBI, the CIA, the Homeland Security, and the Department of Defense to develop a terrorist threat integration center to merge and analyze all threat information in a single location. Our government must have the very best information possible, and we will use it to make sure the right people are in the right places to protect all our citizens. Our war against terror is a contest of will. in which perseverance is power. In the ruins of two towers, at the western wall of the Pentagon, on a field in Pennsylvania, this nation made a pledge, and we renew that pledge tonight. Whatever the duration of this struggle, and whatever the difficulties, we will not permit the triumph of violence in the affairs of men. Free people will set the course of history.
And that's great. In the western wall of the Pentagon, that was another code word for getting and continuing receiving support from the Jews and for those who favor a strong defense of Israel. The Wailing Wall, the Western Wall of the Temple, and the Western Wall of the Pentagon.
Today, the gravest danger in the war on terror, the gravest danger facing America and the world, is outlaw regimes that seek and possess nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. These regimes could use such weapons for blackmail, terror.
Actually, it's not terrorism that's the greatest threat. It's that America herself has turned her back on God. That's the greatest threat. That we promote immorality. We have thrown aside, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal. That's the greatest threat. The corruption of the law and disdain for God by our government.
Small groups of men seized control of great nations, built armies and arsenals, and set out to dominate the weak and intimidate the world. In each case, their ambitions of cruelty and murder had no limit. In each case, the ambitions of Hitlerism, militarism, and communism were defeated by the will of free peoples, by the strength of great alliances, and by the might of the United States of America.
John McCain is adjusting his belt. That was bad timing, John.
Now, in this century, the ideology of power and domination has appeared again and seeks to gain the ultimate weapons of terror. Once again, this nation and all our friends are all that stand between a world at peace and a world of chaos and constant alarm. Once again, we are called to defend the safety of our people and the hopes of all mankind, and we accept this responsibility.
That was a very good way of putting it. You know, the liberals say, what are we supposed to police the world? No, we don't have to police the world. But when it's in our best interest, we can go after criminals, international criminals, if we so choose.
America is making a broad and determined effort to confront these dangers. We've called on the United Nations to fulfill its charter.
We will be back right after
this. And stand
this.
By its demand. We are strongly supporting the International Atomic Energy Agency in its mission to track and control nuclear materials around the world. We are working with other governments to secure nuclear materials in the former Soviet Union and to strengthen global treaties banning the production and shipment of missile technologies and weapons of mass destruction. In all these efforts, however, America's purpose is more than to follow a process. It is to achieve a result, the end of terrible threats to the civilized world. All free nations have a stake in preventing sudden and catastrophic attacks, and we're asking them to join us, and many are doing so. Yet the course of this nation does not depend on the decisions of others.
And that's very good that we have our own foreign policy. We don't need to follow the United Nations that put Libya at the head of their human rights commission. Libya, one of the world's leading human rights violators, is at the head. And Iraq, in April, will be at the head of the disarmament convention of the UN. How's that one?
I will defend the freedom and security of the American people.
And that's a great line, and that is the number one responsibility of the government and therefore of the president.
Different threats require different strategies. In Iran, we continue to see a government that represses its people, pursues weapons of mass destruction, and supports terror. We also see Iranian citizens risking intimidation and death as they speak out for liberty and human rights and democracy. Iranians, like all people, have a right to choose their own government and determine their own destiny, and the United States supports their aspirations to live in freedom.
Now, I wonder what Bible passage we could get to show that people have the right to choose their own government. Let's try to find a Bible passage that supports that.
On the Korean Peninsula, an oppressive regime rules of people living in fear and starvation. Throughout the 1990s, the United States relied on a negotiated framework to keep North Korea from gaining nuclear weapons. We now know that that regime was deceiving the world and developing those weapons all along. And today, the North Korean regime is using its nuclear program to incite fear and seek concessions. America.
All right. We are coming back. This is Bob and Yurt Live, joining the president in progress in his State of the Union address, where he's just gave a very subtle dig against the Clinton administration about through the 1990s, North Korea had made an agreement but was actually deceiving us.
America is working with the countries of the region, South Korea, Japan, China, and Russia, to find a peaceful solution and to show the North Korean government that nuclear weapons will bring only isolation, economic stagnation, and continued hardship. The North Korean regime will find respect in the world and revival for its people only when it turns away from its nuclear ambitions.
Yeah, when a government is a criminal government internationally, then we could restrain them.
And the world must learn the lessons of the Korean Peninsula.
Inshallah.
And
there's
not
no
allow
H in that
an
word.
Even greater threat to rise up in Iraq. A brutal dictator with a history of reckless aggression, with ties to terrorism, with great potential wealth, will not be permitted to dominate a vital region and threaten the United States.
And that's very good. We should stand up to the North Koreans, to communists everywhere. Of course, standing up to China is a much different question. How do you do it?
12 years ago, Saddam Hussein faced the prospect of being the last casualty in a war he had started and lost. To spare himself, he agreed to disarm of all weapons of mass destruction. For the next 12 years, he systematically violated that agreement. He pursued chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons even while inspectors were in his country. Nothing to date has restrained him from his pursuit of these weapons. Not economic sanctions, not isolation from the civilized world, not even cruise missile strikes on his military facilities. Almost 3 months ago, the United Nations Security Council gave Saddam Hussein his final chance to disarm. He has shown instead utter contempt for the United Nations and for the opinion of the world. The 108 UN inspectors were not sent to conduct a scavenger hunt for hidden materials across a country the size of California. The job of the inspectors is to verify that Iraq's regime is disarming. It is up to Iraq to show exactly where it is hiding its banned weapons, lay those weapons out for the world to see, and destroy them as directed. Nothing like this has happened. The United Nations concluded in 1999 that Saddam Hussein had biological weapons sufficient to produce over 25,000 liters of anthrax, enough doses to kill several million people. He hasn't accounted for that material. He has given no evidence that he has destroyed it. The United Nations concluded that Saddam Hussein had material sufficient to produce more than 38,000 liters of botulinum toxin, enough to subject millions of people to death by respiratory failure. He hadn't accounted for that material. He's given no evidence that he has destroyed it. Our intelligence officials estimate that Saddam Hussein had the materials to produce as much as 500 tons of sarin, mustard, and VX nerve agent. In such quantities, these chemical agents could also kill untold thousands. He's not accounted for these materials. He has given no evidence that he has destroyed them. U.S. intelligence indicates that Saddam Hussein had upwards of 30,000 munitions capable of delivering chemical agents. Inspectors recently turned up 16 of them, despite Iraq's recent declaration denying their existence. Saddam Hussein has not accounted for the remaining 29,984 of these prohibited munitions. He has given no evidence that he has destroyed them. From three Iraqi defectors, we know that Iraq in the late 1990s had several mobile biological weapons labs. These are designed to produce germ warfare agents and can be moved from place to a place to evade inspectors. Saddam Hussein has not disclosed these facilities. He's given no evidence that he has destroyed them. The International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed in the 1990s that Saddam Hussein had an advanced nuclear weapons development program, had a design for a nuclear weapon, and was working on five different methods of enriching uranium for a bomb. The British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. Our intelligence sources tell us that he has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes suitable for nuclear weapons production. Saddam Hussein has not credibly explained these activities. He clearly has much to hide. The dictator of Iraq is not disarming. To the contrary, he is deceiving. From intelligence sources, we know, for instance, that thousands of Iraqi security personnel are at work hiding documents and materials from the UN inspectors, sanitizing inspection sites, and monitoring the inspectors themselves. Iraqi officials accompany the inspectors in order to intimidate witnesses. Iraq is blocking U-2 surveillance flights requested by the United Nations. Iraqi intelligence officers are posing as the scientists inspectors are supposed to interview. Real scientists have been coached by Iraqi officials on what to say. Intelligence sources indicate that Saddam Hussein has ordered that scientists who cooperate with UN inspectors in disarming Iraq will be killed, along with their families. Year after year, Saddam Hussein has gone to elaborate lengths, spent enormous sums, taken great risks to build and keep weapons of mass destruction. But why? The only possible explanation, the only possible use he could have for those weapons is to dominate, intimidate, or attack. With nuclear arms or a full arsenal of chemical and biological weapons, Saddam Hussein could resume his ambitions of conquest in the Middle East
He doesn't have any plans of doing that, but he has a desire for revenge against America and against Israel and even some of his neighbors. That's what's driving Saddam Hussein right now. His dream of being the king of the Arab world is no longer.
Statements by people now in custody reveal that Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda. Secretly and without fingerprints, he could provide one of his hidden weapons to terrorists or help them develop their own. Before September the 11th, many in the world believed that Saddam Hussein could be contained. But chemical agents, lethal viruses, and shadowy terrorist networks are not easily contained. Imagine those 19 hijackers with other weapons and other plans, this time armed by Saddam Hussein. Take one vial, one canister, one crate, slipped into this country to bring a day of horror like none we have ever known. We will do everything in our power to make sure that that day never comes.
Including arresting Yasser Arafat. That is the father of modern terrorism. So the next time the Israelis surround him, let's have him arrest him and try him. For what? For crimes against humanity? That sounds good.
Some have said we must not act until the threat is imminent. Since when have terrorists and tyrants announced their intentions, politely putting us on notice before they strike? If this threat is permitted to fully and suddenly emerge, all actions, all words, and all recriminations would come too late. Trusting in the sanity and restraint of Saddam Hussein is not a strategy, and it is not an option.
That's a very good line. That's very good. Trusting in Saddam's sanity is not an option. It's not a strategy. It's doing nothing. You know, these French, they got to get their act together.
The dictator who is assembling the world's most dangerous weapons has already used them on whole villages, leaving thousands of his own citizens dead, blind, or disfigured. Iraqi refugees tell us how forced confessions are obtained by torturing children while their parents are made to watch. International human rights groups have cataloged other methods used in the torture chambers of Iraq. Electric shock, burning with hot irons, dripping acid on the skin, mutilation with electric drills, cutting out tongues, and rape. If this is not evil, then evil has no meaning.
Hey, that was an excellent line for us to end with. Of course, the liberal world, they don't believe in evil. They don't think evil exists. They think everything comes down to maybe someone is ill. Maybe they're sick, but there's no such thing as evil. Whereas the Bible says it's sin, it's rebellion against God. And the problem in Africa is not AIDS. The problem in Africa is sexual immorality. It's the problem here. The problem around the world is that we equivocate on right and wrong, on God, Christianity, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal. It's a shame when the best our government has to offer only gets a glimpse of what's right occasionally. This is Bob Inert reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.